You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
11 players on one side, 11 players on the other side. A big piece of grass, a couple of goals and one ball.
One ball!
The aim of the game is to score the most goals in those big looking holes guarded by glove trolls.
He shoots, he scores! Goal.
Scoring the goals.
He shoots, he scores,
scoring the goals.
Hello and welcome to the William Hill League podcast, the final league podcast of the season as well. We've literally run out of games on this edition of the podcast. My name is Alex Dunn, and to talk about the first of those finals is Pete Farries. Hello, Pete.
Hello. I hate this. I hate the last podcast of the season, Alex. It's upsetting. It's really upsetting, especially with no football to come in the summer. So I'm going to have to just go and... You know, the end of Fist of Fun. Did you ever see that?
No.
Stuart Lee and Richard Herring. The end of Fist of Fun, they got into two cardboard boxes and were wheeled away to be put in storage. And that's how I feel at this time of the season when there's no football over the summer. I feel like I'm just being readied to be put in storage. Like at the end of Indiana Jones, you know, in that huge warehouse.
Not seen that either.
Jeez. Anyway,
what have I seen? A Toy Story. Is it a bit like Toy Story when Andy grows up?
A tiny bit.
At the end of every season,
in
he
fact,
just grows
in fact,
up
not,
a little bit.
Not, yeah, not at all, in fact. But yeah, no, yeah, I just feel like that. Like I'm being put in storage. But there's still value to be found in this final championship game of the season. But
we could always do another podcast, you know, through the summer.
That's fine. I'm more than happy to do that. What about?
I don't know. Pick something. It'd probably have to be Scandinavian football, wouldn't it? That's probably the only thing that we could do.
I'll start burning up on my Alf Svenskan now.
I was going to say, if anyone actually wants us to do anything, just tweet us, at AlexDunn0307, any requests, and who knows, we might just do it.
Please, because honestly, I won't earn any money for 2 months now, so if anyone could get in hold of me, that'd be really helpful. I'm going to be on the breadline for 2 months. I've got weddings to go to and a 30th birthday to pay for, so please, anyone, just request something.
The final of the Championship playoff is Reading and Huddersfield. We'll start with Reading. Reading got here by defeating Fulham over two legs, something that I don't think... Well, I think a lot of people were tipping Fulham for success in the playoffs, Pete. I think myself included. And Reading aside, who we've been banging on about all season as being overpriced... At the same time, I still don't really know what they do. Am I being really harsh on a side that are one game away from the Premier League now?
No, because I agree. I don't know what they do either. But the point is, whatever they're doing, even though you and I can't identify it, it's working. I agree completely. Before the playoffs began, I was 100% with Fulham in their game against Reading. But, I mean, myself and Sam did the podcast last week, and I looked at Reading because the price was outrageous on Reading in 90 minutes. 2-1, went as big as 23-10 after the podcast as well, before starting to slowly come in price. We couldn't believe that price on Reading in 90 minutes. Fulham had been completely tactically done in that first leg by Jaap Stam, and they saw it out at home, and that was impressive from Reading. I agree, though. I don't, all season, I've not really known who they are. I mean, even if you look at someone like, for example, Jan Kermagant has been their main striker this season. 19 goals from a 35-year-old is impressive as hell. But the point still remains, they've got there with one striker who's got double figures, 19. No one else in the squad, no one else in the team has got double figures, but you can start to click through. So Behrens has got 6, McCleary's got 9, Abita's been in good form recently, Williams has 4, Swift has 8. John Swift had a great burst earlier in the season. Even McShane, of course, who was sent off in the first leg of the playoffs, 3 goals this season. So they've had a few players who've contributed a couple of goals. You know, Williams, 4. It's been really kind of a team effort from Reading this season. For Huddersfield, there's a couple of questions, but the first thing I think I'd say about Huddersfield is, well done. Because I know that Reading haven't exactly been throwing cash around, but they did sign, for example, Adrian Popa, who has played at the highest level pretty much in the world in his career. Whereas they were just signing these little bits here and there. And what David Wagner did was he set them up tactically. He gave them a philosophy. And I've said this all season, but it's true. He made them fitter than anyone else. When Sheffield Wednesday were taking those penalties last night, they looked shattered. I mean, I'm not saying Huddersfield looked top of the morning, Alex, but they still seem to have a bit more juice in the tank. And that physical juice can, it's going to sound like a weird thing, but this physical juice can really drive the mind, can't it? If you're physically tired, your mind goes with it, and vice versa. And Huddersfield were able to see it through on penalties. They got back into the game. They're going to have plenty of time to rest up, even though they played 120-odd minutes plus the penalties. So I actually honestly believe that Huddersfield will be a Premier League team.
Okay.
Did you agree? I mean, which way would you go here?
I think... If you take it as a championship game, Huddersfield win. When you think about the possibility of Huddersfield being in the Premier League and the possibility of Reading being in the Premier League, I personally lean more towards Reading, but that's purely because it almost looks right.
Well, they've been Premier League team, haven't they?
Yeah, and I know that sounds really silly because times change, and we've seen it with clubs like, let's say, Swansea and Bournemouth in well, I say recent years, Swansea obviously have been well established for a while now, but in terms of sides who have really struggled in the past, or in the quite recent past, yet have managed to get themselves up. Look, Huddersfield, for me, are the better of these two sides, and I think Huddersfield would make a decent fist of staying up as well, just given how almost innovative they are and how different they are. You look at the sides who came up last season from the Championship, and Burnley and Middlesbrough are very similar in some aspects, in that they are quite defence-minded, and Burnley managed to go out and have a fantastic home record, and that's what's ultimately kept them up, and Middlesbrough didn't score enough goals, and that was their problem. With Huddersfield, you just see them, yes, I think there'll be games where they would get hammered, but there'd also be games where, you know, they could dish it out as well. We've seen that this season. They've played very well against some of the big sides. As for Reading, I could see Reading almost falling into the Burnley / Middlesbrough category of sneaking wins here and there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Huddersfield would be one of the smallest clubs to have ever been in the Premier League. There's just no question about that. Even Bournemouth, you could argue, had a bigger, certainly financially, set up than Huddersfield have got. It's going to be intriguing. I don't really know what they would do. But I'm convinced here that Huddersfield win. The other thing, I mean, you could say in Reading's favour, right, that Reading have experience of this. You know, under McDermott, they got promoted through the playoffs, of course. They, you know, as a club, have been up there in the last couple of years. So fine, as a setup, that's great. But Huddersfield's kind of energy and Huddersfield's positivity and everything about Huddersfield this season, they've defied everything already. I mean, this is a club that most people were saying, yeah, mid-table, low mid-table maybe. And have they ever really looked? They had a little bit of a dodgy spell at one point, and at the end of the season, once they'd qualified, they kind of dropped away a bit. But they've never looked like a team who weren't going to be involved in the playoffs, really, have they? I think Huddersfield win this, whether they do it in normal time or otherwise. If you're looking for head-to-heads, one of the rare times I take head-to-heads into massive consideration is a playoff game like this. But it doesn't give us much to work with because both sides, when the home team, won 1-0. So I'd look at the unders. I'd definitely play the unders here. Reading's games, you know, are an unders affair, really. Huddersfield, when they win games, if you fancy Huddersfield, don't forget, by a goal has been the absolute definitive Huddersfield win record this season. I mean, you think about how many games they've won this season, and only Norwich 3-0, Ipswich 2-0, stand out to me particularly, and I think there's another one earlier in the season where they won by more than a goal. Other than that, they win by a goal. And Reading, when they lose games by a goal. I mean, the other thing to say here is the Huddersfield this season, away from home, have actually been, you know, okay. They've not been phenomenal. They've not been brilliant. But where most of Reading's quality come this season, Alex?
Well, in their manager?
Yeah, and in their home game. In their home games. At the Medeski, that's where they've built it. And please, don't think I'm talking about this in a negative, as in, oh, they're only good at home. But the truth is, they are worse away than Huddersfield are. And truthfully, both teams are away here. So I would struggle. I would genuinely struggle. I think on top of that, the Reading 1-0 loss at Huddersfield is more recent than the Huddersfield loss at Reading. I think that was back in February, wasn't it, when Huddersfield hosted Reading and won? Because I think I seem to remember having quite a lot of money on Reading that day, so that's why it sort of stuck. But I am convinced with Huddersfield here. I really am. If you're looking for goal scorers, well, then Kachunga, Wells, obviously, have got to be considered. On the other side of things for Reading, there's only one man, really, the 35-year-old. Although, I would say Obita has been in good form recently. Did score what seemed to me to be a bit of a cross rather than a shot. Jordan Obita, but that's not really the point. Back-to-back goals in back-to-back games. Scored against Burton. Scored in the away game against Fulham. So Obita might be worth a bit of a nibble as well. Or even someone like Philip Billing. I mean, Billing scored the winning goal when these two sides met earlier in the season as well. And he's a young man who I think probably will be at a Premier League club, whether it's Huddersfield or someone else, come the beginning of next season. So I'm with Huddersfield here. I think they're fitness, I think their tactics, I think their exuberance, and actually I think they might use their, to quote, to try and find a better word, naivety in a better way. Reading all season have been ticking over, doing more than people thought they would do, but I think that if on this final occasion isn't going to work for them, although 7-4 might be a play for you. It's not a play for me.
Okay. I'm going to name some teams now and some numbers, and you're going to tell me what the link is, okay?
Go on.
Swansea, Reading, 2010-11, plus 51. West Ham, Blackpool, 2011-12, plus 53. Crystal Palace, Watford, 2012-13, plus 38. QPR, Derby, 2013-14, plus 48. Norwich, Middlesbrough, 2014-15, plus 71. And 2015-16, Hull, Sheffield Wednesday, plus 55. What are those numbers, Pete Ferries?
Is that when the first goal was scored?
No, unfortunately not. It's the combined goal difference of the two sides in the playoff final.
Ah,
so
okay.
51, 53, 38, 48, 71 and 55. This year, plus 2. Reading and Huddersfield keep it tight, don't they?
Well,
this playoff final, I'm sure, will be won by a goal.
Yeah, and unders, this is why I'm looking at unders.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see it being ridiculous.
Such a different season, isn't it, though, from what we've... normally, trends would suggest it's fairly free-flowing sides that get there. But I think it's testament to how open the Championship's been at times this season.
Yeah, and I mean, don't forget as well that it was unders last season, wasn't it? Hull-Sheffield Wednesday, the final. It was unders the season before that when Norwich beat Borough. That was 2-0, wasn't it? It was unders the year before that, Derby against QPR, wasn't it? 1-0, that was that last-minute Bobby Zamora goal.
Mm-hmm.
So unders in the final, it was unders Palace-Watford. I've just got the list of now as I'm talking, actually. It was, in fact, you've got to go back to the 2012 playoff final for the last time. It was overs on the goals in the Championship.
Yeah. And this looks more of an unders than any of the others did. So,
which Sod's Law would mean it's going to be 4-3. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm all over the unders. It's probably my favourite bet of the entire thing, to be
okay.
honest.
One final question.
Mm.
Who's it going to be? Reading or Huddersfield?
It is going to be Huddersfield, who are going to be a Premier League side next season.
Okay. Best luck to both sides. It's going to be an absolute cracker in the Championship playoff final. Thank you very much for listening to the League podcast over the last year. Hopefully we'll be back in pre-season for a look ahead, a transfer update and everything else. Say thank you to the listeners, Pete.
Yeah, in all seriousness, I was kind of wanting to jump in there. Again, thank you very, very much for listening this season. It's been really good. If you've been following Al's tips, you'll have made a fortune. If you've been following mine, you'd have made a little bit of money. And if you'd have followed Gav's, then luckily Al's would have cancelled it out. But it's been really, really good. It's been fun this season as well, doing it in a different way. And thanks to everyone for sticking with the change and plenty of new people listening as well. So genuinely, thank you very, very much and have a lovely summer.
That's lovely, Pete. You're a man of lovely sentiment.
Thank you.
Exeter, Blackpool. Two clubs, one place in League One to play for. Let's start with the semi-finals, because even ardent Carlisle fans would probably concede that Exeter deserved to get through over the two legs. Several good Mark Gillespie saves, Joel Grant missed a one-on-one in the second leg, and in the first leg, two perfectly good goals disallowed and the penalty that Exeter weren't awarded. Exeter and both teams to score should have landed twice at big prices. It did land once, and 15-4 for the final is again far too big. It's fair to say the 3-2 on the night and 6-5 on aggregate score between Exeter and Carlisle belied the quality gap. In the second leg in particular, Exeter were ahead for most of the game and still outplaying the opponents. Ollie Watkins has woken up as well. 12 games without scoring, and then he knocks two in. The second goal in particular, looking like a man who had his confidence back, even in the time when the man who, of course, was the star striker for Exeter in the first half of the season, he misfired for 12 games and the Grecians still hit 22 goals. That is around two goals a game without their main front man. And if Watkins really has found his shooting boots again, it puts even more emphasis on Exeter to get some goals. Well, there's your basics right there. Exeter will score. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Both finalists scored six and conceded five in normal time across the two legs. So on a wide open pitch at the National Stadium, calling for goals is not exactly pushing it. Frankly, both seem to score, and over 2.5 goals at 21-20 is more than a fair price. There may have only been 11 goals in the last six playoff finals in League Two, but I reckon this one is going to buck the trend. As for Luton and Blackpool in the other semi-final, extra time predicted there, but befitting a man who's just been told he's been released by his parent club Reading, Stuart Moore then goes on to concede a 95th minute own goal for Luton to send Blackpool to Wembley and thus denying us the Blackpool to win it in extra time bet. Right team, just the wrong method. And Blackpool, they will tell you, are the most successful ever playoff side. That, strictly speaking, is true. This is a record extending seventh final for Blackpool. They've won a joint record four playoff finals. What does that mean? I'm going for absolutely nothing. What bearing do the finals of 91, 92, 01 and 07 have here? None. 2010, maybe a tiny bit. 2012, a tiny bit more, but they did lose that final. As you can probably guess, I'm not budging what I've been predicting for months, which is an Exeter playoff win. And as for Exeter, I'm backing them for four main reasons, I think. One, they'll have the bigger support. A poll in the Blackpool Gazette found two-thirds of respondents saying they weren't going to Wembley in continuing protests at their ownership. Exeter will have tens of thousands at the National Stadium, probably tens of thousands more than Blackpool will have. Secondly, the big pitch. Exeter are not the tallest side in the world. They are a technically good side who should thrive on a large, flat, slick surface with the space it provides and the ability to play the ball on the deck. Thirdly, Blackpool's skin of their teeth, Ed, both qualifying for the playoffs and then getting through to the semi-finals. Exeter have known for ages that the playoffs were going to be their destiny this season. They've been in this mental mindset for longer. It sounds a small thing, but I don't think it is. And fourthly, every team in the top half of League Two won more games on their own ground than Exeter this season, but no team in the entire division won more away. And every time I mention Blackpool in these previews, have done all season, you have to mention Bloomfield Road. It's where they won the semi-final, of course. The late own goal Luton scored in the semis in the second leg was a Blackpool equaliser in the 90 minutes. It is the six wins in their last eight games at Bloomfield Road that snuck them into the playoffs on the final day of the regular season. If you want their last six wins away, you have to go back over 6 months. When they're not at Bloomfield Road, their record is 1-3, 3-9. 4 wins in the 13 games in 2017. They've also failed to score in three of the last six away, but given the way the semi-final went, another 6-5 aggregate win, and the size of the Wembley pitch and the porous nature of Exeter's backline, I think giving them a goal here, that's not exactly a stretch. The question then is, who scores? Sadly for me, at the time of recording, there were no priced goal scorers. However, for Blackpool, Mark Cullen is the obvious. 5 goals in 5, including a hat-trick against Luton in the first leg of the semi-final. Also had 2 chances and notched up 2 assists in the second leg of the semi-final. So anything above 23-20 or 6-4, I'd be interested for a man in form. As for Exeter, Ollie Watkins normally heads the market. As I mentioned, he's only just back scoring again. And on the bigger stages, he can go missing. I'm far more interested in the calmer head of David Wheeler if he comes up at about 6-4 or bigger. Also, of the two sides, it's Blackpool that like to start the faster. They've scored more in the first half than the second half since the start of April, which is a bit of an anomaly in League Two. Exeter are more a second half side, particularly of late. So a drawn first half, Exeter's second half at 5-1, or the more outlandish Blackpool to be leading at half time and not win at 17-2. I think it's one of those where you just sort of choose your level of risk. As I mentioned, both teams to score and over 2.5 goals. That's 21-20. There's also the, not as silly as it sounds, both teams to score in both halves. Now that's 14-1. It landed in one of the legs of each semi-final. But the middle ground of a split stakes on Exeter and three or more goals, Exeter and four or more goals, Exeter and five or more goals at 5-2, 11-2 and 10-1 could well be worth it. I'm sticking with the same bet again, though. It's again Exeter and both teams to score, and that is 15-4.
Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.